supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, seed starting is not for the timid. I want to tell you right now that if this is your first time gardening, go out and buy your plants. Get used to killing big ones outdoors before you start killing little tiny ones inside. But if you have some experience and you want to start some seeds, we'll talk about exactly the best way to get those seeds started. After lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine, but I'm cold.
Okay, and where is Jim cold?
Well, I live just north of Traverse City, Michigan, and just south of the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, well, Garrison Keillor always had this great line, nature does not care for you, nature wants to kill you. That's why that's why winter exists in the north. It's to cull the herd, and you're about as far north as many of our listeners can be. What's the actual name of your little area?
Leelanau County, which is just north of Traverse City.
All right. Yeah. What can we do for Jim in Leelanau?
A few months ago, I bought a 50-pound bag of black sunflower seed, the oil sunflower seed, and I brought it in the house in a side room off the kitchen, and before I knew it, we had flying varmin, little moths that they think they've taken over my wife's pantry.
What do you mean, They have taken it over, Jim.
I need your help. I have to do something. She's throwing food out. She sees these little wormies, and she's not pleasant with me right now.
Right.
And yes, it is my fault.
Yes. No, it's not. This stuff happens. Coming in on birdseed is not unusual. Coming in on, like, bulk grains and cereals and stuff is a very common way these pantry moths get into the house. Once they do get into your pantry, then, yes, anything that's not in a sealed plastic container has to be gone through very carefully. And if you see any of those worms, throw it out. But luckily, science has had a cure for these creatures for a couple of decades now, and they are pheromone traps. Now, pheromone traps used outdoors against pest insects can be dicey because the sexual lure can often bring more insects to your garden than would have visited it normally because they think there's a party going on. But inside a closed house, it's a remarkably effective way of capturing the adults. Now, any eggs that are laid and any little, quote, worms, little caterpillar, little larva that are hatched, they're not going to be affected. But by killing off all the adults, you stop the cycle. So you can buy these things mail order. You can often buy them in bigger garden centers and home stores. This is often something you can get at a good hardware store or a big home store. And you want it to say pheromone trap, you know, that's P-H-E-R-M-O-N-E, for it'll either say grain moth or pantry moth. And these things are typically come flat. You fold them open and they make a triangle. And inside is a sex lure that you'll take out of its protective container so it's nice and fresh. And then the inside of the triangle is all sticky. So they think they're flying to the prom, and instead they fly and get caught on these little pieces of cardboard. If your infestation is really bad, you'll have to keep checking the traps and replacing them or making them sticky again, because I've had situations where you can't even see the trap anymore. It captures so many moths. And don't put them away. I mean, even if you are moth-free for a couple of days, leave out a fresh trap for another week or so, and that way you'll catch any last ones that emerge as adults before they can breed again. And people who have, buy a lot of bulk cereals and stuff like that, they not only invest in the plastic containers that seal to keep their cereals and stuff like that in. It's not expensive to just have one of these things in your cupboard and have it open to catch the first one. Because in the summertime, these creatures can even fly in from the outdoors. So just get a bunch of traps, leave them around. It'll be remarkably effective. This will be 100% cure for you.
That sounds great, Mike.
All right, good luck, Jim.
Great program. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Linda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Linda. How are you?
I'm doing great, but just a little bit chilly.
And where is Linda a little bit chilly?
In Gallatin, Missouri.
In Missouri, huh? Okay. So what's the difference between people who call their state Missouri and Missouri?
Well, my understanding is it's whether you're from here or not, but I've sort of been schooled by my husband, who's a native, and I just say it the way he says it.
And where is Linda from?
I actually grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, my goodness. So
yeah. So this is cold.
Yeah.
Well, the cost of living's a little bit better over here.
I can imagine. Yeah, well, sure, it costs a lot to live in paradise now, doesn't it?
It did a lot.
All right, what can we do for Linda in Missouri?
We actually just recently moved here, and we've got a new house, and the house has a planting bed, a very large, long, meandering bed around three sides of the house. And I don't really know anything about gardening, but I'm trying to get into it, which is why I've been listening to the show, trying to get a clue. And I heard in your show that this chipped wood mulch is not very desirable, and this entire bed is full of it. So I was hoping to find out what maybe I should do in terms of removing it and then what I could replace it in to try and keep weeds from coming up and to put in something attractive.
Right now, I would say it's doing no harm. And as you note, it is preventing weeds. I would just be curious, aren't you curious as to what was growing in those beds?
There are some things. There's some ornamental grasses. There's a few kind of smallish shrubs that look like maybe they haven't grown in very well yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely bulbs planted.
Are you going to be content with just at least watching it through the end of spring to see what comes up?
Sure.
Because that is one issue. When people have a new home that has some landscaping and some bare areas, I beg them not to rip it up or try to overplant it, because sometimes there'll be not only spring bulbs coming up out of the ground, but what are called herbaceous perennials, perennials that die back to the ground and often leave no trace whatsoever, especially if the gardener cleans them up once their top parts are completely dead. For instance, I can't see where my peonies or my hostas are anymore. They will just shoot up out of the ground in the spring to surprise and delight me. And there's lots of other plants like that. So, you know, there's always the possibility that these beds might even be close to completely filled. And I'm sure you got plenty to do inside the house, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got two little kids. I never have a moment that I need to fill.
And how thick is the wood mulch?
It's actually not that deep. I actually had to pull quite a bit of grass up this fall just because grass had sort of moved in there and a few weeds. So it wasn't completely keeping weeds out even.
Okay.
And in doing that, I noticed it's only a couple inches deep, and mm-hmm. then it had like a black plastic wrap under it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you specified that. So what I would suggest you do in the spring, you know, once the weather warms up nicely and things start greening up, I would just get out there with a hoe and just hoe all the wood mulch to one side of the bed and then kind of bring it over the edge. Collect it and just take it somewhere and pile it up. It's not colored mulch, is it?
No, it looks sort of black.
Okay. I would just pile it up somewhere over the course of a nice long summer, especially if you can mix some coffee grounds into it, it'll turn into remarkably good compost.
Oh, okay.
But get that landscape fabric up as best you can. You may want to get out there with a really sharp knife and just slice it along the edges and get that landscape fabric up. It does not prevent weeds one bit. It makes weeds, as you may have noticed with the grassy weeds, very difficult to pull.
I did notice that.
Yes.
I pulled up a lot of fabric with it, and I wasn't quite sure what to do about that.
Keep pulling up fabric. This stuff is useless.
Okay.
As you can see, it has little holes in it to allow water and air to get through. But that's the perfect situation for grass to grow up through and then for the roots to mat down underneath and anchor it. So get rid of the wood mulch, compost that with some coffee grounds, and then get rid of that landscape fabric. And by the time spring is over, if you see that some areas are bare, feel free to put out a couple of tomato plants or pepper plants or ornamentals. If you want to plant more landscape plants, more long-term plants, more shrubs and small trees, wait till the fall. That'll be a better time than right before your Missouri summer hits.
Okay.
All right, Linda?
All right, great. Well, thank you.
All right, you take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and thank all of our listeners who are also members of their local public radio station. If you're hearing us on broadcast radio, it's your support that helps make it possible. Like they say on all them classy PBS shows, thank you for your support. And please do go renewing or starting that membership during your station's winter membership campaign so we can be right back.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will get you off onto a path of seed starting success by making sure you don't start with garden soil or over-fertilizing your baby plants to be. We'll tell you exactly how to get young plants off to a good start after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Mark. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic.
Where is Mark fantastic?
I'm in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia is where you are, in a nice area down by the Brandywine Valley a little bit.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. What can we do for Mark in Westchester?
Well, Mike, I messed up and did not get my garlic in the ground in
December
or October, no.
None of it?
None of it.
How could you not plant your garlic?
I'm a claims adjuster, and I just got a little busy, you know, in September. And
oh, yes, yes, because of Superstorm Sandy.
Yes.
Yeah, we had one of you guys out at our house. We lost a magnificent Norway spruce that we had treasured in the backyard. Yeah, the Blue Jays. We used to have three families of Blue Jays. The thing was so big they could actually coexist, and they're just flying around. Homeless Blue Jays are a pain, man.
Well, hopefully that Norway spruce didn't end up on your house.
So, well, it hit the house. It didn't damage the house, but it did hit the house, so the insurance company helped pay for cutting it up and taking it away, which is better than nothing.
Yeah,
So anyway, Mark, how much garlic did you grow?
I have a pretty good amount. I've got two varieties that are two second generation and one variety that's a third generation.
Well, it's all last generation now.
It might be.
You didn't try to replace it or any. You didn't. I guess you never got out there, right?
No.
Okay, so the first thing I'll tell you is what Art Walk has told people who still have spring bulbs around. Take some of it, and on the next nice day when the soil is warm enough, put some of it in the ground. I would also, do you have any nice containers and any soil-free mix around?
I can make that happen.
I would plant some in containers. I had great success planting my excess garlic in containers last year. What I did was I took long, deep containers. I still gave the garlic the 6 inches between heads it would need to develop a full size, planted it, you know, 6 inches deep in the container, and then took the containers outside and put them right up against the side of my house where they'd get some sun, they'd get some rain, but they'd also be in a relatively sheltered location. Then when that recent cold wave hit, I covered them with branches I had saved from discarded Christmas trees. And the year before, which was a very mild winter, the garlic in containers did fabulously. I think if you do one or both of those two things with, say, half of what you have, you may be able to continue your crop. You may be able to limp along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's some people who still insist you can plant garlic in the spring, which I find is a totally just ridiculous. But you can still get an extra couple of months in there, and you should get some decent garlic. Again, at least enough to preserve the strain that you're developing.
Now, if I throw it in my raised beds, what if I could build some sort of cold frame over top to protect them and maybe get them a little extra?
You know, that's not the worst idea. What I would do is I would build the cold frame first, or I would cover the bed with clear plastic for a week in advance to heat up the soil,
okay.
Plant it, and then remove the plastic and then replace it with row cover or sheer curtains or something that breathes that would keep a little heat there. But yeah, if you could warm up the soil in advance, that would be fabulous. Cold frames are dicey. They could cook on a hot day. But yeah, a clear plastic or a cold frame would warm up the soil enough for planting. And then row cover would help them warm up faster on hot days in the winter, or sunny days in the winter, and keep the heat in the soil later in the day. And then anything that you can't use, obviously it's sprouted, it doesn't taste good anymore. When the growing season starts, take all that garlic, throw it in a blender with some water, strain out what you have, put in one, in let's say, a pint. Put in one drop of dishwashing liquid and one drop of vegetable oil, shake it up, and then spray that on your plants as an insecticide or an insect preventer. Garlic is very useful as a pesticide. Garlic sprays are used to keep mosquitoes out of backyards. So if you have an early invasion of aphids or flea beetles or something like that, that would be a good use for your garlic that never got planted, that's at that point totally ruined.
Okay.
All right?
Well, awesome. Thanks for your help, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Mark.
Thank you.
Take care, man. 1-888-346-9499. Paula, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you here, Paula. Where are you from?
Greenville, North Carolina.
Okay, very good. Beautiful part of the country. That's like a gardening mecca, an oasis, a paradise, right?
We think so. We enjoy your shows.
Well, thank you. I like being on the air there. I think I wish I had a beach house there, though.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do for Paula in North Carolina?
Well, I was lucky enough to get a beautiful peppermint amaryllis for Christmas. It's been 3 years now, I think, and so now I have a very happy amaryllis, but it has satellite bulbs all the way around it that are as large as a small onion.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I'd like to, you know, give some of these to my friends, but I just wasn't sure when to dig them and how to pull them apart.
So you have a real green thumb.
I just have a perfect place, and they're just so happy there. I think that's all it is, really.
Now, do you do these inside, outside, a mixture?
Outside in the ground.
All 12 months of the year?
Yes.
I live in the wrong place, Paula. I live in the wrong place. There's ice all around us and ice dams on our roof, and you're growing tropical plants in the ground year round.
Yep.
Well, these are called offsets or bulbets. And the fact that you have the absolute perfect conditions clearly is why this plant is so happy. It's not only flowering for you, it's having babies. So you don't even enforce a rest period. It just blooms for you regularly.
Well, in the summer it does. Now, it doesn't have any foliage on it now.
Right.
Of course. And I did learn the lesson about, you know, just have it half buried in the soil. So I always try to
Excellent. Keep
the soil from around the crown, you know, the crown of it. But I do have a sprout on one of those little satellite bulbs popping up right now with his little head sticking out. Green leaf, you know, like, but I don't know, an inch high maybe.
Well, I mean, you are bending all of the rules, but it's clear from the plant that it just adores you and it adores that location. Now, are the people
all sun all afternoon? Let's get full afternoon sun on facing west.
Now, the people you want to give the offsets to, are they good gardeners?
Well, no, but they have some good sunny locations I thought they might prosper in. I really haven't done anything except, you know, several weeks or so I'll go around and scratch around the dirt from around the bulb. That's really all I do, other than water.
And that's one of the reasons it's been so happy. You know the secret that at least half of that bulb likes to be above ground or else it starts getting soft on you.
I wasn't sure that's what it was, but I've always heard that. My mother taught me that.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Iris is the same way. The less you bury an iris, the more beautifully it'll flower. And the same is true of amaryllis. You could just have the bottom tenth, or just the root system in the soil, and that bulb would be real happy. So I would tell you, because you're going through a cold spell and these people are not necessarily very good at it yet, I would wait till the springtime. And then any bulbets that are sprouting, but they're just small sprouts, what I would do is I would dig out around it. And very
Are you saying mother bulb too?
No, I changed my mind. Let's keep the mother bulb's roots in the soil. But we can expose her bare bottom. We can go down to the very roots.
I can handle that. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll just pull those offsets off. You'll just gently snap them off. They'll come off by themselves, and there won't be any obvious wounds. They're almost entirely moved out on their own already. And they should plant them the same way you have. Make sure they understand the fact that these bulbs should never be completely buried. And what may happen the first year is they may send up some leaves, but no flower stalk. That's perfectly normal. Let them feed the plant after its leaves appear. That's the time to feed an amaryllis, is when the leaves are collecting solar energy. That's fueling the growth of the flower. And then the next time around, the next cycle around, it'll probably be the flower stalk first, like your mother bulb does. And then after the flower stalk is done, then the leaves will appear to collect energy for the following year. So I would say when the soil warms up, expose those bulbets, snap them off, give them to your friends, have them plant them outside halfway, keep them nice and moist, but they shouldn't feed it until the leaves are all out and open, and they shouldn't think anything is wrong if they don't get a flower the first year.
Very good. Thanks so much.
And maybe for you to come visit it and talk to it nice once or twice.
I do that. I take pictures of it and say, oh, my goodness, thank you so much. Yeah. I had four blooms on one stalk last year, and they were all of them larger than saucers.
Oh, people are jealous of you, Paula.
It was so happy.
All right. Well, you have continued good luck with that plant.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Sean, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How you doing today?
I am doing well, Sean. How are you, sir?
Oh, not bad. Got a couple issues with a mango seed I'd like to have you figure out for me.
Okay. And where is Sean and his mango seed?
Ozark, Illinois.
Ozark, Illinois, huh?
What's very extreme southern Illinois. Nowhere near Chicago.
Okay.
We live out here in the middle of the Shawnee National Forest.
That must be nice to live right outside of a national forest.
It's all right.
So what can we do for Sean in southern Illinois?
Well, I've got a couple mango seeds that I've tried to grow down here.
Yeah.
I've actually, once you cut the mango open and actually get to the seed husk inside,
right.
I've actually split it open and pulled the seed itself out.
Okay. Now, I want to stop you there.
Okay.
My wife loves mangoes, and so we buy them. They seem to be in season all the time because they're tropical. And, you know, she'll peel them, and then she'll get down to what looks like a little flat football inside, except it's not little. It's actually pretty large. So you're saying that's only a husk, right?
Yep. The seed is actually inside. If you'll take that husk and find the ridge across the rim of it,
yeah,
and take a knife and just stick a knife down through there and kind of pry it apart.
Yeah.
That'll actually peel open and the seed's inside of it.
And how many seeds are inside a typical husk?
Just one. It's about two-thirds of the size of the actual husk that you pull out of the mango.
Oh, okay. So that's not that deceptive then. It is a big honking seed.
Oh, yeah. It's a big old seed.
Have you gotten them to germinate?
I have. I've actually had a couple, three, four of them growing around here.
Oh, okay. What have you done? Have you, dropped them into some soil-free mix in a pot and kept them watered?
I've actually just dropped them in some organic peat moss.
Right.
And actually, I've put a couple in organic peat moss and a couple in just some organic soil.
Right.
And they'll come up. I've got a couple that are just a couple inches tall. I haven't done anything special to them. That's why I was calling you. You're the guru. You're supposed to tell me all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I grow tropical trees in my house all the time. You know, actually, I do have birds of paradise, a very tropical plant growing inside my house, which is pretty crazy, but so far I'm getting away with it. So these are recently started, Sean, within the last couple of months?
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're about an inch to 2 inches tall.
Well, I would imagine, being as they are tropical fruit, and of course I'm just going off the top of my head, I don't know this for sure, but I think there's a good chance they would come, quote, true from seed. That is, if we could accommodate the size of the fully grown tree and give them the correct conditions, they could fruit. Now, I'm not quite sure how big mango trees are. I suspect they are big honking trees.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens to them as a houseplant. Certainly, they should never be exposed to cold temperatures of any kind. But once your nights start staying reliably 55 degrees or above, they could certainly go outside until the reverse occurred and the nights started getting cool. And then if you really wanted to try to convince them that they were in the right place, I'm going to guess that these things are probably native to close to the equator. And they're going to do their best on 12 hours of light and 12 hours of darkness that doesn't change much. So if you really wanted to get them onto a good growth cycle, for instance, you would take them outside at a time when the late spring, early summer, was about equal hours of daylight and darkness. And then once that changed significantly, bring them inside. Now, I'm experimenting right now with some really cool indoor plant lights that are LEDs. And they're really bright, and they're very inexpensive to run. And the little setup I got came with a timer. So it'd be really easy to do 12 and 12. It's going to be fun to grow and just keep potting it up into bigger pots and see if it turns into the kind of a shape where even if you don't get fruit, you might just love it as a houseplant.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Do you think trying to stunt the growth on this thing?
Well, it generally, yeah. When you grow stuff in a pot, it will always keep the plant smaller. But if you were going to grow these things to get mangoes, I think this is your excuse to move to Costa Rica.
I don't think Costa Rica is in my future.
Well, you know, then neither are mangoes, man.
Do you know if I need to grow that in acidic soil?
Most tropical soils are acidic because there's a lot of rainfall. They're also fairly low nutrition, so I wouldn't overfeed it.
Well, good news. I'll keep you informed and let you know how it does.
Yeah, if it gets real cool looking, send us some pictures.
Will do, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn listeners far and wide that my springtime tour will soon begin. I'll open the season at the Rockville, Maryland Community Home Show on Saturday, February 9th. Appear at the Upper Dublin Public Library on Monday, February 18th. That's President's Day at 7 p.m. And then I'll be at the Suburban Home and Garden Show at the Expo Center in Oaks, PA, Friday through Sunday, February 22nd through the 24th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to get your seeds off to a good start. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in just a little bit, seed starting time will soon be upon us, and I want to repeat my warning to new gardeners not to try to do everything in 1 year or the first year. If you haven't grown plants outside yet, buy them already started. Don't try to start seeds the first year you start gardening, because it's a totally different skill. But if you got a little bit of skill and you've muddled around in this and you're ready to take the plunge, we'll tell you exactly what kind of mix your seeds need to get off to a healthy, happy start. After a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jeannie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jeannie. How are you?
I'm fine.
And where is Jeannie Fine?
Abingdon, Virginia.
Down in the Tri-Cities area.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful group of gardeners down there. I've had such a great time the times I've visited. We get lots of phone calls and emails. Very happy to be on broadcast radio down there. What can we do for Jeannie in Abingdon?
My yard has been overrun with moles.
M-O-L-E-S.
Yes.
Which means that you have raised tunnels all through your lawn. And if you step on them, the raised part goes back down into the ground.
Yes.
Moles are interesting, and you would appear to have true moles if you have the raised tunnels. A lot of people think they have moles when they have voles, V-O-L-E-S. But the two creatures couldn't be more different. Now, you know that the moles that you have, they're not eating any plants. They're not a danger to garden plants whatsoever, except for the rare occasion where when they're building a tunnel, they push one out of the ground. But they don't eat them. They eat three things primarily in the soil. They eat earthworms, they eat cicada larvae, and they eat grubs, the larval stage of Japanese and other beetles. Now, did you have, perchance, a bad Japanese beetle year recently or a cicada emergence?
We had both. I had a real bad Japanese beetle breakout, I guess, 2 years ago.
Right. Okay, so then that would probably account for the moles, because if you have a lot of Japanese beetles, they're laying a lot of eggs in your soil, that means there's a lot of larvae in your lawn, and that's one of the favorite foods of the moles. Did you do anything while the beetles were out and eating your roses and grapevines to the ground?
Most of the time, I just gathered them off and put them in water and let them drown.
Okay. And you use soapy water, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, you know, it's a sin. I wish you had called me back in the fall, because there's an all-natural substance called milky spore disease.
I put that down.
You did? When did you put it?
Yes. It's been down. I need to redo it because it's been down, I'd say, 10 years or longer.
Oh, so you did it a long time ago.
Yes.
See, a lot of people, though, make a mistake. They put it down in the spring, and a lot of garden centers sell it in the spring, but it doesn't work in the spring.
No, it goes down in the fall.
Oh, right. Excellent. Well, Jeannie, you sound like you know what you're doing. Now, do you take care of your own lawn?
Yes, we do.
Make sure it's never cut lower than 3 inches. And do you water it by hand during droughts? Do you have an automatic system of some kind?
We water it by hand.
Excellent. So if you get into the kind of a drought over summertime where you feel you need to water, don't water every day or even every other day. What you want to do is give the lawn deep soakings once a week where you can water for like 4 to 6 hours, ending first thing in the morning. And that way, it'll go down into the ground, the roots will store the water, the lawn will be good. But if your lawn is cut high and the top of the soil isn't moist, Japanese beetle females will not lay their eggs in your lawn. So you can really cut the number of grubs that way. What I think you should do this coming spring, I know there's a couple of very hip garden centers and good places to buy natural products in your area. So I want you to go there or go online, and you're looking for castor oil-based mole repellents. These are sold under brand names like Mole Med, Mole Away, okay. And these are just concentrated castor oil. You can buy them dry or you can buy them in liquids and spray them on your lawn. And what happens is the castor oil has a terrible smell, but it permeates downwards. It will make the soil stink. You won't smell it above ground. But the moles can't stand it. It's like living next to a leaky septic tank or something. So if you apply it early in the season before they start breeding and you apply it heavy enough, the moles will often move off to another lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So early in the spring, I would definitely do lots of castor oil and then make sure you never cut that lawn below 3 inches and water deeply once a week. Keep it as dry as you can in between. And then, of course, put down the milky spore again this fall because it sounds like you're due for another one.
Okay.
All right, Jeannie?
All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. You take care and have a good season coming up.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Brian, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful today. Wonderful.
And where is Brian wonderful?
I am in Brookhaven, Pennsylvania.
What can we do for Brian in Brookhaven?
Okay, I have recently inherited a Meyer lemon tree.
An indoor citrus, yes.
And the previous owner could not get it to fruit or flower at all. And so I don't know anything about them, and I just wanted to be pointed in the right direction, try to get it off on a good foot.
Do you know how old the tree is or what its origins were? Was it a purchase tree? Was it a gift from, like, a catalog to that person? Could they have possibly started it from a lemon seed?
I believe it is a lemon seed, and it is about 6 years old.
Yeah. Well, you'll find out soon enough. Citrus started from seed may or may not turn into a flowering and fruiting tree. The Spalding Guide is to buy professionally raised plants that are typically grafted onto a rootstock, and the desired variety, such as the famous Meyer lemon, is grafted onto this rootstock that's known as a dwarfing rootstock, and the plan is to keep the tree a very manageable size, because as anyone who's vacationed in southern Florida or southern California knows, a standard lemon tree, it's not unusual for them to be 6, 8, 10 feet tall and have quite a girth about them. But to have them grow indoors in a pot, you need to start off with the right variety grafted to the right rootstock. Sometimes growing from seed will work, but you're always going to get a standard tree. You know, a lot of citrus, you know, has nice glossy leaves, is a very attractive plant. How's the girl otherwise?
She looks great. Nice glossy leaves, puts off new growth, nice shape. I want to say right now it's probably about 3 foot high by maybe 3 foot round.
Yeah, I believe you probably have a standard tree.
Okay.
You know, with pruning, you could keep to 6 feet. How big's your house, man?
Well, I have an open spot I could keep it in. I mean, I guess I'll just keep it as a nice houseplant then.
Yeah, especially if it's 3 feet tall already. You've been repotting it up into a bigger pot?
Correct.
Okay. Well, if it's 6 years old, it's going to tell you something within the next 2 years. So keep it going. Give it lots of room. Prune it for size and shape. That really shouldn't interfere with the flowering. What do you feed it?
Just some compost.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what. If you want to find out whether anything can be done, do you have an outside garden as well?
I do.
Okay. Go out and buy a bag of what's called rock phosphate.
Okay.
This is a mined form of phosphorus. It's totally natural, but it's very high phosphorus content. It's literally mined in phosphorus mines. And a little goes a long way. You would only, like, put a teaspoon around the top of the soil, and then you would cover that with compost. And then it's going to take a couple of months for the phosphorus in that rock phosphate to become biologically active and get into the cellular structure of your plant. But when it does, it is the single best element to induce fruiting if a plant is capable of that, you know, flowering and then fruiting. And outside any of your garden beds where you want to improve the fruiting of any plant, we can be talking tomatoes, azaleas, rhododendrons, peppers, anything that produces flowers would like a little bit of this phosphorus in the soil. But a little bit goes a long way. We're talking teaspoonfuls, and okay, only applied like once every 3 to 5 years. So this bag will last you forever. You always either bury it a few inches below or cover it with some soil or compost so the activity gets started right away.
Great.
All right, good luck.
All right, thank you, Mike. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. The right mix for starting seeds. Larry Roebling, on your last show as our substitute producer, would you read us this week's question, please?
I'd be happy to, Mike. Dave in Carlisle, Pennsylvania writes, I'm really interested in starting my own vegetables from seed this year using soil blocks, but I'm finding quite a disparity in the basic recipes for soil block seed starting. They generally involve peat moss, soil from existing garden, perlite, lime, compost, and a fertilizer mix of blood meal, green sand, and rock phosphate. But they vary. Some omit the garden soil, some omit the lime, and the amount of fertilizer mix can vary greatly from recipe to recipe. I've also been told to find another source of potassium because green sand takes too long to break down to be effective for the young plant's needs, but I am doubtful of this information. Can you give me advice?
Well, I would never, ever, ever include garden soil in a seed starting mix. But yes to the milled peat moss. And yes, you then need a little bit of lime or ash from a hardwood fire to balance the pH, as peat moss is acidic, while lime and wood ash are alkaline. But you only need a tiny bit, say a teaspoon of lime or ash per quart of peat. A little dab will do you. Perlite, a mined volcanic mineral that's popped in big ovens until it looks like little styrofoam balls, is another absolute essential in a seed-starting mix. It allows more air around the roots of the developing plants, provides less resistance to the growth of those roots than almost anything else you could use, and greatly promotes drainage. But that fertilizer mix just sounds weird. Your source was correct. Green sand takes quite a while to become available to plants. Same with rock phosphate. In the outdoor garden, they're typically added to the soil 6 months to a year in advance to give soil microorganisms time to release the power of their, respectively, potassium and phosphorus. And blood meal is a slaughterhouse byproduct that does provide nitrogen, but certainly wouldn't be the first choice of vegetarians. Besides, compost will supply all the nutrition that baby plants require. You're not otherwise supposed to feed them until they get a couple sets of true leaves at the very earliest. And I personally don't get the idea of soil blocks either. Hunks of dirt pressed into a blocky shape with a specialized device. My ideal seed starting mixture is for use in containers. Recycled garden center six packs or similar vessels that retain water provide excellent drainage and are long and deep enough to allow maximum root growth. Now, when I make my own seed starter, I mix equal amounts of milled peat moss with a little bit of ash from my wood stove to balance the pH, perlite, and screened compost. But I start a lot of seeds and often use packaged mixes. These can be called soil-free, professional, sterile, seed-starting mix, or something similar. Some companies substitute core, shredded coconut fiber, for the peat moss, and that's fine. Some premium mixes will include cool natural fertilizers like worm castings, and that's excellent. Just don't use mixes that contain chemical fertilizers or so-called water-holding crystals. And these might be often the only choice you'll see at the big box stores.
Dave sent us a reply. He wrote, "Okay, Mike, tell me how you really feel. Don't hold back," laughing out loud. "Now I really want to understand the why of a few things. I believe garden soil is meant to prevent some form of shock when transplanting. You seem very passionate in this answer. What can go wrong by adding a little soil? It's the same soil the plants will grow into in 2 months, right? And why are seed blocks bad? Last year I used toilet paper cores to start my seeds and planted them right in the ground. That worked fine, but I'd hate to not use the $100 block starter I already paid for."
Well, yes, garden soil is where those plants are going to go eventually. But that soil can contain weed seeds and harbor disease organisms, both of which are much bigger threats to baby plants than big ones. Most garden soils are also heavy with clay, which defeats the purpose of a light soil-free mix. And having garden soil in the mix won't lessen transplant shock one bit. The best way to avoid shock is to not plant outside too early in the season, to harden your plants off by gradually acclimating them to the great outdoors for a week, and to install them in the late afternoon instead of early in the morning so they can get settled in before they have to endure their first long, hot, sunny day. And I never got soil blocks because, by definition, they compress the soil, which is the opposite of what I recommend for helping baby plants develop deep roots. However, I do like the toilet paper core trick you used last year. Those little rolls of cardboard have enough depth for excellent root growth. They won't impede that root growth when planted outside, and they'll decompose over the course of a season. Heck, slide them up a little bit at planting time, and you also have instant cutworm collars. Is that block maker you bought attractive? Maybe you could pose it on a piece of marble and call it art. Well, that sure was some useful information about starting your seeds off right now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over at your leisure. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to poach my pearl light if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your target for your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check foist to see if the information you seek is already waiting at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. Watch the video of my recent TEDx talk. Listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook, where we post new content every day, or close to it. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. We bid a fond farewell to substitute producer Larry Roebling. As Alexis Landis, who normally produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, returns from maternity leave next week. Good job, Larry, say our social media director Amanda McGrath, production assistant sap-sucking Brett Rader, esteemed editor Al Banks, and me, the unmanageable Mike McGrath. We'll see you next week. Some like it hot, but many garden plants do not. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how to be prepared for hot, dry summer weather, plus your fabulous phone calls.